This is XTP Media.
You're listening to Extended. Your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello everybody, welcome to episode 66 of Extended. My name's Gareth Stringer, I'm the editor of Global Aviation Resource. I'm delighted to say that, as ever, Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society is with us. Tim, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
Hello, everybody.
We have a bit of a gap tonight, Tim, don't we? For the first time in 66 episodes, our wonderful host, Peter, oh, that's a good start, isn't it? Peter Johnson is unable to join us. So he's left us two to get on with it on our own. And Peter, we're missing you already. I know he'll be back for the next one. And sorely missed. So absent friends, I'm raising my glass. And but we've got a couple of able replacements. We've got a couple of guests, and the first one of which is well, he's a bit of an extended legend, I think. He's a good friend of the show. It's author Roland White. Roland, how are you?
Evening. It's really nice to join you again fail to live up to a billing as legend. I look forward to disappointing everybody.
But you can paint another extended mission mark on your headphones for being here.
I'm joking, but you know, I've got a box on the wall.
I lose track. I'm not sure how many it is, but you are very welcome. Back by popular demand. We also have a brand new guest. It's a very, very exciting one. His name is Ed Skio. He's from Sim155 Games, a flight simulation developer, developing a fantastic product called Combat Air Patrol 2, which has got the one and only AV-8B Harrier jump jet in it, and this incredible campaign that we're going to learn a lot more about later on. Ed, welcome to Extended.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Great to have you. We all love a bit of simulator action, so I'm very much looking forward to hearing more about that. But, as ever, we're going to crack on with a little bit of news to start with, because there's been plenty going on. Tim, can we start with Donald Trump?
Why not?
He has tweeted today, as we're recording, about the F-35, but that wasn't actually the reason that we were going to talk about him tonight. We were going to talk about the fact that he says the order for new Air Force One planes should be cancelled.
Yeah, so obviously this is President-elect Donald Trump. He's on his way to the White House. Brace yourselves, everybody. And he's got an interesting line in negotiation. I don't know whether this is from his sort of real estate days or from the apprentice sort of reality TV show, but basically he's carrying out negotiations, by the look of it, with defense companies on Twitter in 140 characters or less, accusing Boeing of, that they're $4 billion they're costing too much, cancel order. That was for Air Force One. Two aircraft, well, it's not actually specified how many aircraft, but they're getting. This is replacement, obviously, for the VC-25, which is a highly, highly modified 747. Obviously, hardening a jumbo jet to make it survive a nuclear blast, from EMP and all the rest of it that goes on, that isn't cheap. So he's had a go at that. Boeing's share price briefly plummeted. And today he's come out and said similar thing with the F-35, that it's expensive and, there's going to be sort of changes coming there. So At the moment, it's an interesting time if you are in the US, you're in the US of defense industry, and you're in the PR sort of bit of the US defense industry, because what do you do? I've got a feeling this is sort of, opening shots in maybe a longer game, and maybe part of his strategy there is... You know, he's been elected on the idea of draining the swamp, and whether you like it or you don't like it, or he's gone in there and he's going to be tough on these defense companies that are milking the system, etc. It's worth noting as well that Obama also, when he came in, one of the first things he did was look at the Marine One helicopter. That was over budget, so it's not without precedent. It's just that the way he does it is a little bit more, shooting from the hip, Twitter. So it's going to be an interesting time. Interesting as to what the defense industry does and how do they cope with him. This kind of negotiation via Twitter, among other things, obviously.
4% he knocked 4% down Lockheed Martin shares after that tweet today.
Well,
that's just extraordinary power, isn't it? I mean, he's not even the president yet. the power that he's got from his phone.
It bounced back, didn't it? But it bounced back quite quickly. As Tim suggested, I suspect that there's. I mean, one would like to believe there's a longer game and a strategy in action. And I think one of the things which has been interesting from as an MO from Donald Trump, full stop, has been that. It's the initial statement that gains the traction popularly, and it almost doesn't matter what happens subsequently. It's the thing that was most outrageous first that sticks in people's minds. And it doesn't. It's a little bit like, a controversial tabloid front page, which is subsequently, subsequently gains an apology a few days later, halfway through the paper, and a sort of paragraph and hidden away in the bottom right. Everyone remembers the first statement. What follows is, even if it's correction and even if it's what lasts, is neither noticed nor appreciated.
In other military news, Tim, Russian naval aviation, their carrier Admiral Kuznetsov is carrying operations combat deployment off of Syria. They've lost two aircraft in recent weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, so obviously this has been the Kuznetsov. There's great media furore in the UK media, at least, when it was sort of sailing down the North Sea and down the Channel and belching smoke as it went. Various newspapers and media outlets, were running stories with maps and handy diagrams and all the rest of it, and arrows of where this thing was going, and it just proves that carrier aviation is hard. It's difficult. It's you've got to keep your skills on it, and it's something that you have to train for, and you have to keep. You can't allow it to fade in any way. It's a demanding environment.
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, well, I think, again, funnily enough, there's a comparison to be made with Trump in that, if you ask, it'll only be people who've been reading aviation magazines or listening to Extended who will know that they've lost a couple of jets in the sort of Eastern Mediterranean. And so, again, it's the initial action that gains attraction and makes a statement. The detail of it, I don't think will be appreciated. So in that respect, despite losing those two jets, despite, as you rightly point out, proving that, you have to be at the top of your game with naval aviation, they've made the point they wanted to make. They've certainly not deployed it because it's militarily useful.
That's probably a very fair point, actually. Tim, another brief piece of carrier news is that after, I mean, long, long delays. You may have a better idea than me exactly how long, but the Indian Navy has finally rejected its locally made, its LCA Navy, the light combat aircraft, and is going to import a replacement fighter for its carriers, basically because the LCA is not powerful enough.
That's right. So, I mean, here's a nice sort of a Harrier link for Ed. Obviously, the Indian Navy had Sea Harriers. They got rid of those. They've got now got MiG-29Ks, and they're not really sort of quite as happy as the MiG-29Ks as they thought they were. There were a lot of problems with engine serviceability and that sort of stuff. And the whole idea was the light fighter, the Tejas, the indigenous light fighter that had been developed by India over God knows how many years, would be a naval version of it, and it would fly off a ski jump like the Russians do, Stobar, short takeoff, barrier recovery, arrested recovery, yeah. So that's sort of a, you know that the how the Russians do it. Disadvantage there is obviously you can't take off with quite as much a great payload than if you do it the catapult, and also if you do it via a Harrier ski jump because or the F-35 because there you can actually vector the thrust line, and that kind of is the magic bit that kind of makes you get into the air with. You know, a bit more weight than you know an Su-33 would do. So problem is, Tejas is too heavy. So the Indian Navy has suddenly decided, well, this thing's too heavy. It's not gonna work on a ski jump. We need a new fighter to go off our carriers. That's got to be able to do Stobar, and we don't want a Russian one. That is going to be an interesting because there isn't anything around in the West that does, you know, and they want it in about 5 or 6 years. So the contenders are some kind of sort of a variant of the Gripen, Sea Gripen. Saab have already looked at that. Maybe Rafale. Boeing apparently have already sort of simulated a Super Hornet going off a ski jump in simulations. The Indians have said that they're not interested in F-35, so that rules that out. Whether they could afford F-35 or whether America would export F-35 to India, that's another sort of like another question. But yeah, so put your bets on what they're gonna get, you know.
Yes, time will tell. But judging by the delays already, let's not hold our breath for that one. That could be some time, I'm guessing. Just to finish off the news, two sort of space related stories, but we'll start off, Tim, with Virgin Galactic. The second spaceship to Unity made its first solo flight.
Obviously, if you've been tracking Virgin Galactic, they had the crash in 2014. It's taken them a long time to get back in-flight breakup, unfortunately, which killed one of the test pilots. Taken a long time to get back into flight. VSS then, therefore, Unity is therefore the second spaceship too, and they've just flown it for free glide. So you know, back on track, I would say. But you know, I would say sort of, you know, they're probably taking it, you know, very very cautiously. You know, not that they weren't taking cautiously before, but obviously having that accident. Subsequent investigation, you know, steady as she goes, you know, yeah. Might be a bit disappointing for you know, their customers who are, you know, with the tickets, but you know, they'll get there eventually.
Yeah, definitely. That's some positive news. We're going to finish with a sad piece of news, which was the passing of John Glenn, last of the Mercury 7, a true American hero, I think it's probably fair to say. And for anyone like me who has read and seen the Wright stuff numerous times and is interested in the sort of space race back to its earliest days, an absolutely extraordinary character, a man who was I think it's probably fair to say, Roland, because I'm going to come to you, was he was a hero before he became an astronaut through his combat record in the Second World War and in Korea. He was a record breaker as a Marine, yep, as a Marine pilot with sort of coast to coast in an F-8 Crusader, I think, if my memory serves me correctly.
Right, yeah.
And of course, he then went on to You know, he's the first American to orbit the, you know, he orbited the Earth and then went on many, many moons later, if you excuse the pun, and flew on the space shuttle. Very, very sad to see John pass. And Roland, I'm sure you'd like to say a few words.
Yeah, I mean, it is, as you rightly point out, the sort of passing of an era. And as he as news began to sort of to filter out about how unwell he was, David Axe at War is Boring and also a Daily Beast columnist asked me my thoughts about John Glenn, and I thought about it a little bit and realized that what sort of seemed to define him in my mind was that you know, when you think of an astronaut, what you think of is somebody in John Glenn's image. You know, before John Glenn and the Mercury 7, but Glenn particularly, perhaps even more so than Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom, seemed to sort of become the archetype. You know, when you thought of an astronaut, you thought of somebody who was like John Glenn. And so in that respect, you know, he was the benchmark. He sort of set the tone for everything that followed. You know, as much as, you know, somebody like Keith Richards defined what it is to be a rock. You know, John Glenn was the guy who became the template for what it was to be an astronaut. So, you know, a really significant character in space history, and, you know, the likes of which, obviously, for that reason, we'll never see again. But, you know, a genuinely legendary character, and you know, it's very sad to see that he's passed away. But you know, a good life well led.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that interested me was I put a couple of tweets out because he was somebody who, you know, meant quite a lot to me, and it was really interesting to see people who maybe I only talk to them about football and stuff normally, do you know what I mean, but people were tweeting me back saying, oh, it's really sad, and crikey, you know, I've just read up about this guy, what, you know, what a life he led. And,
yeah,
and that when you get that impact going, you know, beyond a little bit more into the sort of general consciousness, I suppose, you think, crikey, yeah, you know, he was the man.
Yeah, very few people are worthy of being played by Ed Harris.
Yeah,
but John Glenn was.
And wasn't that just the perfect bit of casting? He basically was John Glenn.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah, every so often they really nail it, don't
yeah
they? And that was one of those occasions.
Let's face it, John Glenn was even in Apollo 13.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And Westworld now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, quite right. Quite right. So there we go. Very, very sorry to see John Glenn pass.
Hopefully.
And, you know, thoughts are with all of his family. So that concludes the news. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and have a chat with Roland.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society has a range of specialist groups which focus on a specific domain or discipline. They form a vital interface between the society and the world at large, and serve both the interests of enthusiasts and professionals through debate, conferences, lectures, and other activities. Learn how you can get involved. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Okay, so Roland, back with us again. Just a bit generally, first of all, how's 2016 been for you? What you've been up to? Into the blacks come out. What are you working on now?
Hasn't it been the worst year ever? I think by common consent. I mean, it started off pretty badly for me with the, you know, original Starman and Life on Mars singer David Bowie dying in January, and that sort of set the tone at the beginning of 2016. But I mean, you know, obviously there's been as much as there have been kind of surprises and sadnesses throughout the year, it's been an absolutely sort of riveting aviation year. I think you know, perhaps from a British point of view, the thing which is kind of made the greatest impact on the widest possible number of people in aviation terms, Tim Peake's flight. And yeah, obviously left at the end of 2015, but it was his return, obviously, where the potential for him to become this sort of superstar was properly realized. And, you know, some people I'm sure will know that I work in publishing by day. And, you know, his book's been number one by a country mile since the moment it hit stores. You know, really has kind of been embraced in a way that I'm not sure that perhaps, you know, previous, even in, you know, Helen Sharman's time in space, had previously sort of captured people's imagination. But there seems to have been an appetite for that, which has been, you know, fabulous to see.
I think somebody said that it was their best ever outreach campaign they've ever done.
Ah, well, I mean, I'm sure that that's right. I mean, you know, in terms of the money spent, what was it, a few million pounds, which obviously sounds like a lot of money, gaining him that slot has, you know, more than paid for itself, I think, in terms of the inspiration he's provided for, you know, STEM subjects and kids through his spaceflight. And it was interesting. I went to the Scott and Mark Kelly space lectures event a few months ago. I was lucky enough to meet Mark and Scott Kelly there. And Scott Kelly, who was obviously station commander while Tim Peake was up there, said that, and he's a man who's you know, one of NASA's most storied and experienced astronauts, said that of all the people he'd flown in space with, Tim Peake was in the top two. So it isn't just a kind of British good news story, you know, as an operator, you know, as an aviator, as a person, he was rated extremely highly by people who would, you know, not have suffered fools.
Roland, a quick question from me, Roland. And I'm not demeaning Tim Peake's part in this at all. Ooh. But do you think we should be doffing our caps to Chris Hadfield and what came before? Because Chris, I think, played a massive part in bringing that into everybody's sort of line of thinking, didn't
they? Well, and with that, Tim, you've Gareth, right? You very neatly brought together David Bowie and the space station. That's brilliantly done.
Welcome to Music Extended. Talking about pop hits.
Radio skills are finally honed, aren't they? I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when after Chris Hadfield had you know, signed off with his version of Space Oddity, I mean, what was it? The flight director said, you know, Houston, we have a superstar.
Yeah.
And you know, absolutely right. And what's been interesting about Chris Hadfield is, you know, obviously he's Canadian, but he became a sort of global figure in a way that actually, I'm not sure that his predecessors from NASA had quite made, you know, they hadn't made the same impression, you know, as Chris Hadfield did. You know, something about him that just captured the world's imagination, and as you say, you know, paved the way for what Tim was able to do. But I mean, you know, prompts, I suppose, this is something I mentioned on a previous episode of Extended, thoughts of what might have come before Tim Peake in terms of Britain in space, and thoughts therefore of Winkle Brown's passing kind of earlier in the year. And you know, as much as you know, John Glenn had sort of defined to a very large extent you know, the American aviation story, you know, Winkle, Eric Brown, done the same for us. And you know, we lost him in 2016, and if there was a kind of silver lining to that, the place that he holds in British aviation story, the place that he earned and commands in the British aviation story, is now seems to have been much, much more widely appreciated. You know, he has really been celebrated as one of this country's finest, and that he was able to appear on Desert Island Discs and, you know, charm Kirsty Young and all Radio 4 listeners, you know, before we lost, it was a sort of wonderful thing. And, you know, nobody could ever accuse him of not having squeezed everything into an extraordinary life.
No, totally.
So, you know, there's a silver lining to his loss too.
And you mentioned a couple of names on, you know, it's a very sad list of people that we've lost this year. Roland, you know, Bob Hoover should be on there. Pete Collins, former Red Arrow, Harrier pilot, test pilot. Ed Strongman, the Airbus test pilot. Joe Sutter, of course, we've already mentioned. John Glenn. But I know there was another name that you wanted to tip a wink to as well, which was Pete Dunlap.
That's right, less well known, but somebody who I've been considering alongside Pete Collins, actually, who obviously was he was a Harrier pilot, Pete Collins, and flew with 809 Squadron just after the end of hostilities during the Falklands War, and I've been looking with a view to bringing together two strands of a story at 809. 809's involvement in the Falklands War, and then alongside that 617 Squadron's participation in the 1984 Strategic Air Command bombing competition in the States, and Britain's the Royal Air Force entry in 1984 was a detachment from 617 Squadron. And prior to their departure, one of the American sort of undersecretaries for research and development attached to the Air Force had dismissed Tornado as heavy and no good, just not a great aeroplane. 617, after coming back into being as a Tornado squadron at the end of 1983, were dispatched to the States to take part in the 1984 Strategic Air Command bombing competition, and led by a man called Peter Dunlop. And he was one of the flight commanders on 617. And despite having been written off by kind of many quite senior people in the US, they competed against the best that Strategic Air Command could offer, B-52s, FB-111s, and the Royal Australian Air Force F-111 contingent. And they won every single competition they were eligible for. And then returned home on what I've since learned was a pretty raucous VC-10 flight. RIP also Peter Dunlop, who very sadly I didn't get a chance to talk to, but I've been beginning to talk to some of his colleagues during that sort of rather extraordinary event. And, you know, it is a great story which sits very happily alongside 809's involvement in the Falklands War. And of course, the reason I'm trying to look at those two stories together is because 809 and 617 are going to be the first two British F-35 squadrons. Yeah. And we've seen, obviously, F-35 make it over the Atlantic for the first time, or make it over the Atlantic, but make it to the UK for the first time this year at Farnborough and at the Royal International Air Tattoo. It's been fantastic to see that in all its sort of complicated and very noisy glory at long last. And I think that, it's certainly given shot in the arm, I think, what lies ahead. You know, it's been a program which, as Donald Trump's recently demonstrated, been one which is very, very easy to take sort of pot shots at. But yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we'd all like at this point to see it succeed, because there ain't many, well, certainly from a British carrier of aviation point of view, any alternatives. But, you know, we need it to work. And it feels to me as if perhaps for all the difficulties that there have been, that we will end up with something that works, and probably works pretty well.
That sounds like a cue there to bring Ed in on the F-35 hovering at Farnborough. Was that a 2016 aviation highlight for you, Ed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. We need the F-35 F-35B, but astounding that we don't have a carrier airborne aircraft capability at the moment. Massive oversight that we've got ourselves in this position when we sold the Harriers for the Marines
6 years ago. Is that?
Yeah.
And
absolutely astounding.
And Illustrious has just gone to Turkey to be to be sold to a scrap merchant, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's actually really quite sad to see that happen. I was watching the unusual part of that this week. Yeah, so yeah, F-35 by all means being troubled, but you know, we need it working as soon as possible.
Totally agree with that. Roland, speaking of what lies ahead, are there any clues there as to what you might be working on at the moment, or is that a...
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you know, big fat clue, really. I mean, I've been sort of circling around a few different things, and, you know, certainly I remain, as I'll explain in a second, really interested in the sort of British space story. But prior to that, I really want to try and tell the story of 617 in 1984 and 809 during the Falklands War. And I'm talking to, you know, the air crew who were involved in both of those. I mean, the 809 during the Falklands is a real sort of almost kind of Dirty Dozen story. You know, they were after the invasion, Tim Gedge, the who had been boss of 800 Naval Air Squadron until just a few months earlier, was asked to form a new squadron of Sea Harriers, and he pulled pilots in from exchange in the States and from Australia. He pulled people out of ground courses and from test pilots. And also a couple of RAF Harrier pilots who had single seat Lightning experience, so some air defense experience as well. And then jets were pulled off out of deep maintenance off the British Aerospace production line, and all sort of standardized in about 3 weeks before they all went south on Atlantic Conveyor. During which they had one jet permanently on standby on the deck of Atlantic Conveyor, should they, in range of an Argentine 707, which you know, there were two occasions where they actually nearly scrambled and didn't in the end. So that's one story. Then the 617 is the other, which you know, just has that great feel, you know, and of course it's the Dam Busters as well, sent off, yeah, to America, written off in what was sort of certainly next to the B-52s and even F-111s, reckoned to be a sort of baby jet, not taken seriously by the Americans, and they won it all, you know, they cleaned up, you know, that's worth cheering, I think. And so that's sort of glued together by various different are starting to feel really exciting as we take a stepping stone from that to F-35, because inevitably it starts to weave in the early British experience of stealth, of the F-117 Nighthawk, you know, early British exposure to that, all of which is going to feature in this story too. So that's very exciting. And then alongside that, I've been writing a few articles for a new magazine, which I kind of love, which is all about sort of adventure and endeavor and sort of classic old technology as well, called Avaunt, A-V-A-U-N-T. And I'm just sort of polishing off something about Frankenstein spacesuits. There were a handful of companies dotted around the company, like Siebert.
I saw your tweets.
Yeah. P. Frankenstein and Sons Manchester Limited, who were based in Newton Heath in Manchester, who made spacesuits, one of which was bought by NASA in 1962, while they were trying to develop technology for the Apollo moon suits. So what technology that was realized by Frankenstein, but at first pursued as a concept at the Royal Aircraft School, the RAF Institute of Aviation Medicine, made it into the spacesuit, kind of guided by a man called Flight Lieutenant, can't remember which. John, he's an interesting character who at Farnborough subsisted for 4 days off nothing but the juice of 4,500 North African whales. They were trying to work out whether a pilot who'd been downed in North Africa who didn't have water could survive by drinking the thermolymph of snails. And thermolymph, as I've discovered, is the invertebrate blood. And so he, over 4 days in temperatures as high as 47 degrees in a heat chamber at Farnborough, drank nothing but 8.9 litres of snail juice. Which, I mean, is just, the whole thing is just so disgusting. But John Billingham, who, as you can tell, is quite an interesting character, was hired by NASA to run their astronaut physiology division, first of all at Houston and then at Ames, and went on to be a leading light in the at the SETI Institute. He died a few years back, 3 years ago, but a really interesting man who I only encountered very recently because I was writing this thing about Frankenstein spacesuits. And just to finish off, Frankenstein not only had an influence or a contribution to make to what was obviously the most iconic spacesuit, the one in which all those Apollo astronauts walked on the moon wearing, but also, as if that wasn't enough, also actually produced the most iconic science fiction spacesuit as well, which I would argue is the sort of collection of orange and yellow spacesuits in 2001, A Space Oddity. So Space Oddity, Odyssey, I mean, all of those were actually built by P. Frankenstein and Sons for Stanley Kubrick when they were filming 2001. So the part of the spaceship was built by Vickers Engineering, the centrifuge in the Discovery, and the spacesuits were built by P. Frankenstein's son. So that's the fun I've been having for Avant magazine, but I need to stop writing magazine articles and concentrate on writing about 617 and 809 now.
And have you got, so just before we wrap this section up, Roland, do you have an idea of when we might see that new project come to fruition?
What, the whole book?
Yeah.
Avant, you'll be able to read that piece about the spacesuits in the next couple of months, I think. But I'd really recommend that magazine. I did something on Lettis Curtis, the sort of legendary British air transport auxiliary flyer, in the last issue. The book itself, I'm hoping I'll get writing it at the end of next year. So okay. I'm going to keep doing all those interviews through 2017. And really dig in, I think, at the end of 2017. So unlikely to see the light of day before 2018. So what will be new next year is a new edition of Into the Black. I have, as a result of the first, the original Into the Black, made contact with an engineer who has filled in quite a lot of blanks about the involvement of the NRO and the spy satellites in that first flight. And this is just gold dust that has never, ever seen the light of day before. So I'm really excited about just updating that for the paperback edition, which will be out, I think, in May next year.
Fantastic. That's great news. Brilliant news. And as ever, it's fascinating to hear from you. And thank you for being with us.
It's a real pleasure, Sam. Thanks for the opportunity to spout.
Tim, before we move on, you made a brilliant list today of sort of highlights of the year. And I know there's things for me like the Aviation Festival at Wonsan in North Korea, which was incredible. Red Arrow's heading east, displaying in China. There's loads of stuff on there that will stick with me this year. But how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the... F-35 at Farnborough, hovering, rock solid. It had critics there who were, sort of hardcore kind of aviation press who sort of with jaws dropped. That was pretty cool. Airship, we had the airship airlander flying briefly. That was a bit of a British technology that made its way into the air. And then other things we got, one of the most sort of exciting things I think was, Elon Musk, obviously he's a guy to watch, and, his ambitious, outrageous, you know, plan to colonize Mars. I mean, wow. You know, I mean, of a year where, you know, people have been, you know, quite sort of worried, concerned. There's been sort of bad news around every corner. You know, here's a guy saying, actually, you know, here's a hopeful plan to realize our sort of science fiction dreams, and here's how we're going to do it. We're going to colonize Mars. Who's with me? I think that was a really interesting sort of thing to kind of sort of stake his reputation on. He's got a large following now, and you know, you've got to sort of say, well, is that the sort of, like, you know, the 2016 equivalent of you know, Kennedy's Rice University speech? Yeah. You know, we choose in this decade, and he's in a space race himself. He's in a space race with you know, Jeff Bezos from Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, overall, you know, loads to look back on, I think. Yeah, good and bad, but it certainly hasn't been a quiet year in an aviation sense. And, you know, we've just skimmed the surface there, really. Please do, you know, send us a tweet or Facebook or a message, and let us know what your highlight of the year was. So we're going to take a short break now.
Event Fire Solutions is an independent fire and rescue service providing both preventative and reactive emergency services across the UK. As well as our main event management, we provide the support and equipment to deliver a safe and risk-free event. From fire appliances to medical vehicles, our fully trained and accredited staff will make your event a true success. If you need risk-related advice, investigation, medical or fire training, then we can deliver this for you. From the office to the airfield, we have the experience and the accreditation, and most of all, the skills to make your workplace event safe and risk-free. To find out more of how we can help you, look us up at eventfiresolutions.co.uk.
Not another flying magazine. The newsagents are stuffed with them. How can the aviation historian possibly be any different from the rest? Well, for a start, it's not a monthly, but a quarterly. It's compact format, not the usual A4, so it's great for reading in bed, in the bog, or in the bath. It doesn't cover the same old subjects, but tells you stuff you didn't already know. It's designed simply so it's easier to read, with no fussy backgrounds or overlapping images. And it's not in the newsagents at all. So check the website, theaviationhistorian.com, for more info. The Aviation Historian. It really is different from the rest.
Hi, this is Peter, and although I couldn't join Gareth, Tim, Ed and Roland for the show, I do get to do the editing. And sadly, as I sit in my hotel room editing the show for you, it's become apparent that the quality of the sound is just not good enough to release. So the interview with Ed, we're going to re-record and send out at a later date.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
What are you reading at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not reading anything aviation related, shockingly. How about you?
You're sacked.
I know. That's terrible, isn't it? Tim, what about you? Have you got anything on the go?
Yeah, I'm just finishing up with The Battle of Britain by Christa Bergström. If you've heard of Christopher Bergström, he's the guy who does the Black Cross Red Star series of books on the Eastern Front, World War II on the Eastern Front, they go for insane prices on eBay. You can't get them for love nor money. Well, you can, but you take out a second mortgage. And this guy's, I think he came out last year, actually, on the Battle of Britain. Interesting stuff. Covers a lot of, obviously, familiar ground, but there's some nice snippets there on Goring. Wasn't the complete buffoon that everyone thought he was. And on the Buffer 110, Bergstrom has an interesting sort of kind of take on the Mi-110, heavy fighter. Everyone else was saying, outclassed, got chopped to pieces, and actually it was doing okay. One of the highest scoring German fighter squadron, fighter wing, fighter group at one point was a Buffer 110 squadron. They were doing pretty well, and a lot of them got pulled back because the RAF started hitting German cities at night, and obviously you got the start of the Blitz in return. A lot of the Buffer 110s got turned into, squadrons got turned into night fighter squadrons, because all of a sudden they realised, Berlin's undefended, Germany's undefended, we need night fighters. So that was quite interesting.
Fantastic. Roland, have you got anything on the go at the moment? Obviously, other than Into the Black, what should be on our Christmas list?
Well, there's a handful of things. I think I mentioned on a previous show that I'd been asked to do some forewords for some kind of out of print aviation military books, eagerly leapt at that opportunity. And the first five of those are out now in paperback and Kindle. The first four are a set of novels by a brilliant, brilliant thriller writer called Mike Lunnon Wood, who wrote a handful of military thrillers before his death about eight years ago, premature death eight years ago. But he was brother of Tony Lunnon Wood, yeah, who was the Red Arrow Buccaneer pilot. And Mike kind of captures British armed forces sort of better than any other writer I think I know. I mean, I think, if Tom Clancy had been British, I said in one of these forewords, he'd have written books as good as Mike Lunnon Woods. And there was Let Not the Deep, Long Reach, King's Shilling and Congo Blue, and they are just outstanding, all four of them. Then the other one I wrote something for was a new edition of Norman Hansen's Carrier Pilot, which is a fabulous book about flying Corsairs for the Royal Navy in the Pacific campaign. And Len Dayton praised it as having everything a war memoir should have, and James Holland describes it as a classic, just says it's sort of adrenaline charged, ridiculously dangerous, thrilling. I mean, it's such a good book. And then still to come is Robert Prest.
No way, is it happening? Is it actually happening?
I can show you a jacket for that one. So that'll be out in the next month or so, and it'll actually have a quote from you on the back, Tim, because which I pulled off the off your blog on the Royal Aeronautical Society, which you love that book, don't you? I mean, it's kind of up there. I mean, except it's all about RAF Phantoms. It's up there with Ernest Gann and Chicken Hawk, and I mean, it's just a brilliant book. And then The Big Show as well is going to be, it's out of print at the moment, but Silvertail have got the rights to that, and there'll be a new edition of that coming soon. So some real quality, some of which are they'll be familiar to people. But if Mike Lunnon Wood is a name that's new to people, I just couldn't recommend him more strongly. You will find them unputdownable if you like a good military thriller.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, there you go, guys. There's a few hints and tips for you. Obviously, we've got this brilliant sort of link up with the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club on Facebook. We'll put the link on the show notes as usual, and you can find a lot more information there about the books that are out and about, new stuff, but stuff maybe that people have found, you know, secondhand and are recommending. Some brilliant stuff there. So we're not going to do the whole sort of get involved stuff, because Peter's brilliant with that and has his sort of has the hand on all of that. So if you have sent us a message, or as Tim said before we started, some abuse, we're not ignoring it or pretending you never sent it. We'll get to that when we record again, which will be crikey, in 2017, no doubt. So before we wrap up, we've got a couple of things to talk about, and just a couple of projects to promote. And funnily enough, Tim got in first, but they're both sort of VR, virtual reality related, Tim, aren't they?
Yeah, okay, so again, this is another promoting, you know, it sounds a bit sort of self-indulgent, but, you know, if you've got access to a VR headset, you've got some, the Oculus Rift, the Vive, or, you know, even maybe Samsung Gear, I'm not sure whether it'll actually run on that. But there is a interactive documentary on Steam. I think it's about... I don't know if it's you know, run about sort of a tenner in price. Apollo 11 VR. It's about an hour 1:45, and it is excellent. If you like Apollo 13, if you've watched Last Man on the Moon, and your kind of heart has sort of swelled the idea of the Apollo missions. It made me cry. I came out of that, you know. It was that moving at being put in the same capsule, or, you know, well, actually riding the elevator with Buzz and Neil, and being put into the capsule of Apollo 11 on launch in July 1969. I mean, it was an excellent example of. You know, educational immersion and emotional, you know, virtual reality. You know, I thought, well, you know, obviously virtual reality, you know, I thought, well, it'd be pretty neat tech. But I didn't expect to have that emotional punch from it. So if you know anyone who's got a you know, a VR headset, beg, borrow, steal, get them to put that on for you. You will not be disappointed.
And, no, I need to check that out. I'm going to get myself some VR in the new year, I think. And on that note, and it's only a trailer at the moment, but if there's any PlayStation or possibly Xbox users listening, check out the trailer for Ace Combat 7, which will be out next year. That has been VR enabled, and again, you know, puts you in the cockpit. And just looks absolutely stunning. I'm sure far more arcadey than anything we've been talking to Ed about. But as a sort of vehicle for virtual reality, you know, in the comfort of your own lounge, looks absolutely stunning. So not really a promotion as such, but just a heads up. Go and have a look for that. Ace Combat 7 looks amazing. Brilliant. So on that note. I think we're going to call it a night, or call it a day, depending on when you're listening to this. Roland, firstly, thank you so much for coming and joining us once again. It's always an absolute pleasure. We look forward to doing it again at some point. But just remind people where they can find you online.
It's Roland with a W, RolandWhite.com. And the Twitter handle is the same. It's just simply at Roland White. And yeah, there's sort of endless stream of pictures that have caught my eye, which I and sort of reflections on what I'm up to as well. And, you know, hopefully people get a sense of what's going through my mind if they follow that that Twitter feed. Yeah, thank you very much indeed for having me on again. It's always a real treat to talk to like-minded people. And you know, obviously, very, very Merry Christmas to all your listeners.
Tim, remind us whereabouts you are.
at RES Timar, and you can find me or find Insight Blog at www.aerosociety.com. We have a new website, apparently. I should have put that for the Promoting Aerospace. The Royal Aeronautical Society's got a new aerospace. Yeah. It's a new blog. It's new and shiny.
You're fired. you will find me at Gareth_Stringer on Twitter, and globalaviationresource.com is where you'll find everything GAR related. And all that really remains is to say, Peter, we really missed you. We look forward to hearing from you next time when we're back, which, as I say, will be in the new year. And of course, on that note, we'd like to wish everybody who's listening a very Merry Christmas and all the best for 2017, and I'm sure Tim will join me in saying thank you so much for all of your support. It's brilliant to know that people actually listen to us and sending the feedback and the abuse and all that kind of stuff. You know, 66 episodes down the line now, and we'll be back next year and bringing you more of the same. So have a good one, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, see you in 2017.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
We all love a bit of simulator action.
Shooting from the hip, Twitter.
Most people, what they know of Russian carrier, they'll remember it steaming down the channel, escorted by one or two Royal Navy frigates or destroyers.
It made me cry.
Extend it.
This is XTP Media.